You're listening to Maternally Yours, your conversation about pregnancy, childbirth, and early motherhood. Our program is produced weekly in sunny Sarasota, Florida at WSLR 96.5 LPFM, Sarasota's community radio station. Listen live on the radio, on the internet, on your smartphone, or at your convenience through our downloadable podcast at maternallyyoursradio.com.
Our mission is to support our listeners in growing empowered families that create empowered communities. Each week, we bring you evidence-based information for your journey through the childbearing years. We do not give medical advice, and with all subjects, we suggest that you thoroughly research your options and speak with an appropriate expert with whom you have a relationship of mutual trust and respect.
The voices you'll hear in the next hour belong to the Maternally Yours Collective and our guests, and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of this radio station, its board of directors, or station management. The conversation may include descriptive language or emotionally sensitive subject matter. We respect all families and understand that it is up to each of us to make the most informed choice possible. We are Maternally Yours.
We are Maternally Yours.
We are Maternally Yours. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome to Maternally Yours, your conversation about pregnancy, childbirth, and early motherhood. I'm Dana King, domestic goddess and mama to Elliot, cesarean prevention educator and maternal mental health advocate.
And I'm Ryan Stanley, progressive activist, lactation enthusiast, community radio maven, mama to Jude and Arbor, who's here with us tonight. If you hear little gurgly babies.
It's Arbor! So in addition to hearing us live on WSLR each and every Tuesday, you can also hear us on Wool 91.5 FM in Bellows Falls, Vermont, KPOV 88.9 FM in Bend, Oregon, WCRS 102.1 and 98.3 FM in Columbus, Ohio, the Detour Network in East Tennessee, and Geneva Community Radio in the Finger Lakes region of New York State. So be sure to check your local listings for our time slot, and as always, find us online at Maternally Yours Radio or now on iTunes.
Yeah, buddy. Woo. And archive.wslr.org, too, is the latest and greatest place to find us. Immediately after the show, you can go there.
That's right. You don't have to wait for us.
Yeah, you don't have to wait for us to get our stuff together. So now we have...
Birth in the News.
Birth in the News.
United Bible Fellowship Ministries Incorporated, which provides housing and care to people with disabilities, will have to pay one of their former employees $75,000 after firing her when she became pregnant in order to settle a lawsuit filed by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Worker Shamira Johnson was awarded $25,000 in back pay and overtime plus interest, along with $50,000 in damages for emotional mental suffering. Claudia Molina Anatinidis, the EEOC attorney in charge of this case, in a press release responded, quote, "This decision is another in a long line of federal court cases rejecting employer policies based on assumptions and stereotypes about a pregnant woman's inability to work. Employers cannot impose paternalistic and unsubstantiated views on the alleged dangers of pregnancy to exclude all pregnant women from employment."
Preach.
Oh, United Bible didn't respond to a request for comment. Despite federal law, workplace discrimination against pregnant women persists. It is estimated that 250,000 pregnant women each year are denied requests for small work-related changes during pregnancy. Having been denied these requests meant to ensure the continuation of their work safety, so many are forced into unpaid leave or simply fired. Taken into consideration the widespread discrimination, many states have gone above federal law and enacted stricter requirements. 45 states now protect against pregnancy discrimination, while 14, along with Washington, D.C., have developed laws requiring employers to give reasonable accommodations to pregnant women if it means they can keep working. A federal law requiring all employers to get pregnant workers those accommodations has been introduced multiple times, but is yet to gain traction. Grrr.
All right. According to a recent randomized trial, children develop better fine motor skills when the clamping of their umbilical cord at birth is delayed several minutes compared to several seconds. It was found that this delay allows fetal blood circulation in the placenta to be transferred to the infant, which is shown to reduce iron deficiency when the child is 4 to 6 months of age. Recently, longer-term benefits have been discovered. Researchers in Sweden, we know a little bit about that place on the show, randomly assigned 382 full-term infants born after low-risk pregnancies to be clamped 3 or more minutes after delivery or within 10 seconds of birth. After the children reached 4 years of age, a psychologist assessed them on standard tests of IQ, motor skills, and behavior. The parents were also asked to fill out questionnaires regarding their child's communication and social skills. The study's lead author, Dr. Ola Andersson of Uppsala University in Sweden, and his co-authors said in last Tuesday's issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics that, quote, delayed cord clamping compared with early cord clamping improved scores and reduced the number of children having low scores in fine motor skills and social domains. The fine motor skills test performed revealed those who had delayed clamping showed a more mature pencil grip. There was also evidence that the boys, who are generally more prone to iron deficiency than girls, showed more improvements in fine motor skills with delayed clamping. Andersson commented that the delay, as it has a large effect on the amount of iron in the blood, is important for brain development just after birth. In a journal editorial published with the new study, a doctor at Brighton and Sussex Medical School in England and her co-authors concluded the potential benefit of improving mental, maternal, and neonatal care by a simple, no-cost intervention of delayed cord clamping should be championed by the international community. The World Health Organization recommends waiting at least 1 minute after birth or until visible pulsing stops to clamp the umbilical cord. Despite this, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists commented in 2012 that it supports delayed cord clamping for premature infants, but believes that there is insufficient evidence to prove its benefits for full-term infants. Cord clamping has been common in medical circles for about 60 years due to the mistaken belief that it reduces the risk of hemorrhage, so non-evidence-based practice happening there. Mm-hmm. The researchers noted that the results apply to low-risk populations of children born to high-income countries. One of the researchers quoted said, if you did the same study in India, you might see a marked difference. There is excellent nutrition in Sweden. Still, the questions about cord clamping remain, such as the ideal time to wait, best position to hold the infant, and the role of milking the cord as an alternative. And just to add, our local midwives all practice delayed cord clamping.
That's right.
Seems to be evidence-based. Imagine.
What do you know? If you have some birth in the news to share, send it to us by email at maternallyyoursradio@gmail.com or post it to facebook.com/maternallyyours. And for links to all of our birth in the news stories, please visit tonight's epilogue on our website at maternallyyoursradio.com. So, everybody out there in the world of radio land right now, we know that you've heard us talk about postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, and various other mood disorders that we can, you know, experience in the postpartum period. But tonight we start to gear up for a month of dad-centered shows, celebrate Father's Day.
It's Father's Day month.
That's right. With a look tonight at what fathers experience both during traumatic birth and once baby has arrived.
So this is kind of shocking to me. I'm going to read some statistics here. Oh, there goes my pencil. Recent findings show 10% of men worldwide showed signs of depression known as paternal postpartum depression, or PPPD, from the first trimester of their partner's pregnancy through 6 months after the child was born. That number goes up from 10% to 26% when the child is between 3 and 6 months old, a rate that is twice the rate of depression typically seen in men.
You know, complete health and well-being are of the utmost importance in childbearing families, especially so. Tonight we aim to shed a bit of light on the struggles that fathers face. So let's get to our first guest now. Dr. Will Courtenay, also known as the Men's Doc, is an internationally recognized expert in men's health and in helping men, boys, and fathers. The American Psychological Association calls Dr. Courtenay, quote, a leading psychologist in the field of masculinity. He is a psychotherapist in Oakland, California, and author of the book Dying to Be Men. He has served on the clinical faculty of the University of California, San Francisco Medical School, and McLean Hospital at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Courtney is the founder of several websites for men, including saddaddy.com, which provides information and resources for fathers experiencing postpartum depression. Dr. Courtney also provides phone consultations to fathers suffering from depression. Are you there, Dr. Will?
I am, Dana.
Yay.
It's nice to talk to you.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure.
So we'll start with the loaded question. Break it down for us. What exactly is paternal postpartum depression?
Well, you know, that's a clinical term, and it's not an official clinical term either. It's what we, you know, refer to as a depression that occurs, I think, as Ryan mentioned, sort of in that, somewhere in that first 6 month period or up to the first year after the father's child is born. And this is different, you know, from the daddy blues, which many dads, like moms, can experience. With normal stress, the daddy blues, the guy's going to feel better when he gets a little extra sleep, when he has lunch with a friend or goes out to the gym. But with depression, those things don't really make him feel better. With depression, the symptoms are more severe, and they tend to last longer.
So in women, sorry.
No, it's really just a depression that occurs in that first year after a child was born.
Well, and it's interesting because with women, we tend to think that postpartum depression is linked to hormones, those hormone changes that come on during pregnancy, and then, you know, that rush and change of hormones that happens immediately after delivering a baby, and that the total sleep deprivation and all of these other things that moms are going through. What causes these disorders in men? Because they're not having these hormonal shifts.
Dads are actually, you started to say they're not. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay.
But actually they are.
Ah.
So, you know, it starts with sleep deprivation, which of course, oftentimes both moms and dads can experience. And this is why, for example, we'll see a greater risk with colicky babies, because colicky babies tend to keep everyone up, not just moms, but dads too, and the whole house gets a lot less sleep. So a lack of sleep is probably the biggest culprit for both women and men. You know, when normal, healthy adults are deprived of good sleep for just 1 month, they can begin to show signs of clinical depression. But so sleep probably plays a big part. Changes in hormones, though, are not something that just women go through. Men go through these as well, and we do think of hormonal changes with childbirth. We think of pregnant women and nursing moms, but men go through hormonal changes not only after a child is born, but even during pregnancy, and it's a double whammy. Not only do our testosterone levels decrease, but our estrogen levels increase. And those aren't the only hormonal changes that occur right before and after a baby is born. I mean, we see changes that occur in the levels of prolactin, you know, which is, you know, we think of as typically associated with nursing moms. But we see changes in the number of hormones that can really wreak havoc on a man's life. And this, in combination with the neurochemical changes that occur in the brain as a result of sleep deprivation, can combine to create a sort of a perfect storm that we then see peak in that 3 to 6 month period that Ryan mentioned.
Mm, well, that explains that statistic pretty well. What rate of fathers experience this in comparison to mothers, Dr. Will?
So, I think Ryan mentioned that the 10% figure. Now, that 10% right. figure, this is interesting. That 10% figure is for men worldwide, and we know this from what's called a meta study. And what that sort of a meta study does is look at lots of different other studies. And in this case, they looked at 46 different studies, and they do a meta analysis of those studies combined. And there was tons of data in these studies too, in most of these studies. So what they found was the 10% of men worldwide. Now, that figure actually goes up to 15% or 14% when we look at men in the U.S. specifically.
Wow.
So there's something that's going on here that puts men at greater risk. One thing we might think about is the United States versus Sweden. That in Sweden, men get a lot more support. They get paternal leave, things like that
right.
we don't have here. And so that may play, some role, but there's something that's different in the United States. And as I mentioned, then it does go up to 26% in that 3 to 6 month period. So that's one out of four dads. So when we actually look at the figures, we're talking about 3,000 dads each day in the United States alone who become newly depressed.
Well,
that's a lot of dads.
That's a lot of dads, yes. Yes, it is.
So you're seeing those 3,000. Are these the only... There has to be more, right? who are coming forward?
Unfortunately, we're not seeing those three. And I don't know if you mean mental health providers,
right.
MDs or physicians, general practitioners. We're not seeing those men, unfortunately. We need to be seeing them. For some of those men, they will kind of go through the process as they will experience that depression in a really acute way. But then as they get more sleep, as all the hormonal changes start to level out, as the baby starts to sleep through the night, some of the stress around home decreases, some of those men will just sort of naturally kind of get to the other side of it. But for some men, they won't, and it will persist. And those men we really do need to see, and unfortunately, too often those men are not being seen. We know that in the United States, too often men who have depression are not being seen and going undiagnosed.
You're pointing over there, Martin. Do you want to say something?
Am I on?
You're on. You're not officially introduced, but you go ahead. I want to know what you're thinking.
My question is, as a dad, my name is Martin. So how would I know if I'm just sleep deprived or if I'm depressed?
Good one.
Well, hi, Martin.
Hi.
I'm so glad you could join us. So you may not be able to know originally, and that's where, as for women, the first line of defense is doing everything we possibly can to make sure that you and mom are getting as much sleep as possible. So that's the first thing. And this is good news for men who oftentimes are really concerned about, so I'm depressed. Does that mean I need to start taking medication? And, for some men, ultimately, that's what's going to need to happen. That's really what they need, and that's the best thing that they could do. But, for other men, it really is, this needing to get sleep back on track. And so you really can't know until after you have gotten the sleep back on track. Unfortunately, that can take a while to do. As we all know, with lack of sleep, one of the first things we want to do when we can't sleep is during the day, we then reach for, a caffeinated soft drink or another cup of coffee, and it sort of becomes a vicious cycle where we get more caffeine in our body and have even more trouble getting to sleep. So starting with some good kind of healthy sleep habits is really, again, the first line of defense in terms of addressing what may be the beginning of the onset of depression.
Hmm. Now, what kind of effect, or not effect, that's the wrong word that I'm trying to use improperly here. What about mothers who are experiencing postpartum depression and fathers who are also experiencing postpartum depression in the same household?
Not a pretty picture, huh? It's very difficult. And unfortunately, that's the biggest kind of risk factor for men. So half of all women who are depressed have male partners who are also depressed. And again, a lot of that can start with, you know, for example, the sick or colicky baby who is making it difficult for everyone in the house to sleep. But it's very, very difficult. And of course, you know, we can talk about this later, the impact on kids. But we do know that when a mother and father are depressed, and when either a mother or a father is depressed, kind of independently, that will impact a kid's well-being in lots of different ways, and it has a long-term impact on these kids. We see this in kids as young as two all the way through adolescence and young adulthood. And these kids struggle more kind of cognitively, behaviorally, socially, academically, and psychologically. So unfortunately, when both parents are depressed, it really is difficult on the whole family.
So we're talking about dads who are sleep deprived. Let's back up a little bit. What about this traumatic birth situation? If a couple has a birth outcome or just their birth doesn't go the way that they had anticipated it going, oftentimes in the hospital it can be a very high stress situation. We know that births can take on the look of an emergency. How is this leading to depression, or is this maybe leading to something else? Other types of psychological conditions?
Well, you know, that's not a really specialized area of my expertise. But one of the things that we do know about trauma is that what's going to happen with any kind of trauma, and that can be a trauma of a birth in a hospital, that what happens is that kind of stirs up any old traumas that we're carrying around with us that we haven't really dealt with. And that's oftentimes one of the biggest problems with, you know, a trauma like that or a trauma in the hospital like that, where suddenly we're confronted by these, you know, an old trauma that we just haven't really had to think about. You know, interestingly, these kinds of things get stirred up too with fathers who end up with a child whose gender is different than the one that they were expecting or hoping for. These kind of old traumas can also get stirred up by having a child in the house when the mother is no longer sort of available to the father. So we know, for example, that men really rely on their partners a lot, their female partners. They are the number one go-to person that men use when they experience stress or any difficulty. Well, what happens when a baby comes along is that, you know, that number one go-to person has got a, you know, 24/7 job, a new job that she's really occupied with, and she's not available. And so that can also stir up sort of old traumas for fathers, and we see this a lot. For example, we know from my research that men who have experienced a loss in their past, so that when they experience, you know, a new child coming into the house and mother is suddenly not there to kind of be there for them, that can kind of stir up that old trauma of that loss, whatever that loss was for them, because that most important person to them is no longer available the way she was before.
Right. Makes sense. How does depression in men look different from that in women? What sort of symptoms are we talking about here?
Well, you know, that is a great question because, you know, when we think of depression, you know, what do we think of? We typically think of somebody who is sad and crying. But depression doesn't always look like depression in men. It can look, in fact, more like irritability and anger, working constantly or drinking or gambling too much. These are some of the ways that men both experience and cope with depression differently than women do. Now, that said, we can also see, you know, classic signs of depression, like, you know, having a sad mood, loss of pleasure in hobbies or sex, a sense of worthlessness, thoughts of suicide. But we have to remember that men are more likely than women to try to hide depression when they have it. So looking for any sign of anything sort of that's unusual is really important. But in terms of depression in general, women and men cope with depression differently. When men tend to have less effective coping strategies than women do, when it, which then kind of further compounds their risk. Men are more likely to try to avoid depression or deny it or distract themselves. So, you know, they'll drink more alcohol. They also use less healthy strategies like talking to friends or getting help. So men are also more likely to experience or report somatic complaints or ongoing physical problems that are then sort of evidence of underlying depression. So the guy with constant stomach aches or headaches might actually be experiencing depression. So those are some of the ways that they differ.
So what are some coping strategies specifically for men who may be going through this, besides the get more sleep advice?
Get more sleep. So, and of course, that's not an easy thing, you know, to do, you know, as a parent. But that, you know, that certainly is, again, kind of the first thing to really try to address. And even before coping with it, you know, what I really try to stress is the importance of actually trying to prevent depression. And, you know, some of the ways to do that is for, you know, to look for any of the sort of the risk factors. So if a man has a history of depression, he's at greater risk. So he should be prepared for that as he enters fatherhood, and, you know, anticipate the possibility that his depression may recur. If he and his partner have a difficult relationship or poor communication, that's another risk factor for postpartum depression. So they should actually see a couples counselor before their child is born. If the father has economic concerns about having a child, which can also put him at risk, that's something that he should try to address, again, before the child is born. But the important thing, I think, once a man does experience depression, the most important thing is to get help, and preferably from a licensed mental health professional and one who specializes in working with men. You know, we know that clinicians are less likely to correctly diagnose depression in men than in women. So it's really important to have to be able to meet with someone, a clinician who really does sort of understand and recognize men's depression. And then, you know, in terms of kinds of treatments, there's, you know, lots of different treatments that range from, you know, traditional to alternative. I'm sure you've talked about a lot of those on your show in terms of addressing women's postpartum depression. Research does show that talk therapy is very effective in treating depression, as is talk therapy in combination with medication. So those are some of the ways of coping with it.
And do you have any specific resources that you can offer for our listeners, Dr. Will, so fathers can find the help that they so desperately need during this postpartum year?
A good resource is actually kind of letting your partner in on knowing that you aren't feeling quite yourself, which is something that she might already recognize. And she might actually be a great resource and a great place to start. You know, she might have some resources right in your community for you. The website you mentioned, my website, saddaddy.com, is another really great resource just because of it. It's got a lot of information about what men go through with postpartum depression. It's also got an assessment for men to complete to see whether they might be depressed. There's also a forum on that website, and it's a great place for men to talk with other fathers about their experiences, and it's a really incredible resource and source of support to those dads, and dads can go on anonymously and just get help and support from those guys on there. So those are all other resources, and there's also a resource list on that website as well. Postpartum Support International is another great resource, both for women and for men, and I'm sure you've talked about that. But they do offer support for men as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Dr. Will.
It's a pleasure.
As you know, it is not that easy to find men that are willing to talk about paternal postpartum depression.
Right.
So we're really fortunate that you're out there doing the work that you are. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have a great night.
I will. Do you want me to stick around, Dana? I'm happy to do that.
You can totally stick around. That would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Hooray! So
I'm interested in hearing what Martin has to say as well.
Wonderful. Little dad exchange going on tonight. You're listening to Maternally Yours, your conversation about pregnancy, childbirth, and early motherhood. When we return from a short break, we'll continue the conversation about paternal postpartum depression and birth trauma with Father Martin Dahlberg. I'm not one to keep a happy secret much longer, so I'm really excited to share that my family is expecting a new baby in January. Yay!
Dana's knocked up, everybody.
I'm telling you, I looked in the mirror earlier and said, my uterus is an overachiever, because this is ridiculous.
There's no hiding it. So, yay! It's Baby Watch at Maternally Yours.
You're listening to Maternally Yours, your conversation about pregnancy, childbirth, and early motherhood. You can find this and all of our recent podcasts on our website, www.maternallyyoursradio.com, where you will also find an epilogue including any resources and links we mentioned in tonight's show. Let's continue our discussion about paternal postpartum depression and birth trauma now. Our next guest, who you heard a little bit from, go ahead, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Our next guest tonight is Martin Dahlberg. Martin is the father of three children, aged 10, 6, and 4, and married to licensed midwife Heidi Dahlberg, founder of Rosemary Birthing Home. We love Heidi. She's been on our show before. Not recently, though. Got to get her back on. He was born in Sweden and grew up in Sweden, Brazil, and the United States, and moved to Sarasota in 1998. Martin is a nuclear scientist by training and currently works as a software developer. His interests beside family include Tai Chi, sailing, climbing, snorkeling, personal development, renewable energy, and better democracy. Martin, you are right at home here. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yay.
It's an honor to be here.
So from your introduction, Martin, we know you have three children. You're married to a midwife. So it might come as a surprise to some that you experienced birth trauma. With your first pregnancy, you planned a home birth that ended in a hospital transfer. Can you tell us a bit about that experience?
Yes. We started at home and kept going for quite a long time. So we got to the point where we decided to transfer to the hospital. And I was not prepared for what happened. The doctor we had planned to work with in case we had to go to the hospital was not available. He was out of town, and the doctor on call was uncooperative, would be the kind word. I was not prepared to have to... to have to defend myself and my wife that much. Mm. So it didn't go the way we had hoped to go. We were basically scared into a C-section, and that had all kinds of consequences in the long term. But yeah, it was, I felt powerless in the moment in the hospital. I tried to create some space just to be able to think about it, and still, we ended up with a C-section. And not that I have to qualify here, one of the things that Heidi has taught me is the appropriate level of care. C-sections are great when you need them. They're not great when you're forced into them. So just to qualify that to all doctors, being a software developer, if I make a mistake, a computer system might go down for an hour or two and might cost a few million dollars for somebody if it's really, really bad. But doctors, I don't think I could be a doctor, because if they make a mistake, there's other consequences. So right. I have a great respect for doctors. But it was still very, very tough for me, that experience.
And you said that you felt like you had to defend yourself and your wife in the hospital. Do you sort of feel responsible at all for the poor, or the, I don't want to call the outcome poor. It wasn't an right. outcome that you were expecting. Did you feel like you'd let Heidi down?
There was one point when I asked the room to be cleared about, except me and my wife and our birth team. And somehow there was a nurse still in the room. And that affected my ability to make choices from my own perspective. She was probably just trying to be helpful and do the best thing from her perspective, but that's not what I asked for, and that's not what I wanted. But I wasn't clear enough to realize that, hey, you're a nurse, you're not on my birth team. I said I don't want you in here. So right. I know that, yeah, it's one of those coulda, woulda, shoulda, but that affected it. And I wanted to call the head OB. It's like, this is not right. I want to do something else. And that phone call never happened. So those are things I mulled upon and wanted to do differently in the past once everything settled down.
Right. Did you experience birth-related PTSD, or what about Heidi?
Heidi definitely had it. I was very angry, especially the first 48 hours. I mean, I got busy being a dad and taking care of the baby and taking care of Heidi, but when I wasn't busy, I was angry, really angry. Part of sleep deprivation, what happened with us was me supporting Heidi as much as possible, giving her as many sleeping mornings as I could. I was independent contractor at the time, so I could flex my time. So I did the mornings with the baby. She got to sleep in. And then I had to disappear, do my job, come back later. So it's now going on 10 years here of, like, we see each other sometimes. It's better now when not everybody's tiny anymore. But there's been a lot of ships passing in the night for many, many years. Luckily, with our experience of working together, we're good at working together, even if we don't see each other.
Well, and you're from Sweden, so you're much more egalitarian just naturally, right?
I think it's genetic. I'm not sure. Well, it helped to have baby number two and baby number three in Sweden, where I did have the parental leave and could recover and take it easy and be off. And
yeah,
I got to have sleep in mornings also sometimes. So, but that was a little later. So I forgot what the question was.
I think you got it in there. Yeah.
Does Dr. Will have anything to, you know, to add to this conversation so far? We've heard a little bit of Martin and Heidi's story.
Well, I'm impressed, Martin, that you were able to. I know I heard you saying you were. You feel that you couldn't do more, but I'm just impressed by how much you were able to do in the hospital, because, you know, I think for the average dad, I mean, they really feel completely sidelined by the experience. And if they try to, like, do anything to, you know, to kind of take control if they think their partner, their wife wants something or needs something, I think it's the structure there makes it just very difficult for fathers to do anything. And it sounds like you somehow kind of pushed through that, and you were able to actually do a lot for Heidi.
Well, thank you.
That I think most dads would never even think that they could do.
Yeah, well, I had some pre-training.
with a midwife or a wife?
With a midwife or a wife.
Yeah.
One thing that people who know me is I always forget people's names, so I'm the perfect partner for a midwife because I'm HIPAA compliant. I don't remember any names. And Heidi never tells me the names anyway, but even if I heard them. So I've heard a lot of stories. Heidi has told me about transfers, so I was kind of mentally prepared on what could happen, but still, even with all that prep being in the situation, and it's right, as you say, it's the hospital operates, and for better or worse, I mean, they need to be able to do that in emergency situations, except that birth is not necessarily an emergency situation, but they still bring the mentality.
Ding!
So, but thank you for the accolade. I appreciate it. But even with all my preparation, they're very powerful in that situation, and you feel very powerless.
Yes.
And what I've tried to remind people of who ask me is that they're there to serve you. So your right to refuse their service, their refusal to receive treatment, it's actually up to you. So
an important distinction. You're the consumer in that in that scenario.
So, Martin, we heard in the sort of statistics, and then Dr. Will talked about it again, that this idea that it's about 10% immediately following the birth and during pregnancy and immediately following the birth that men would experience some kind of mood disturbance, and then it increases in that 3 to 6 months. Did you find that true for yourself, or maybe when Heidi was going through lows, did you find yourself going through lows too?
It was definitely harder for me when Heidi was deeper in her stuff. Just X number of things that have to happen, everything from dishes to laundry to whatever.
Right.
One thought I have a lot about these things is that we used to live like on the farm or in the small village, and all your cousins and aunts and uncles were right there. And that support system has disappeared for better and worse. I mean, we create our own villages now, but I don't think we're built for this, like two parents, X number of children. I think it's supposed to be more people around to handle the ups and downs and the juggles and the things. But I know that my patience quota went down and down and down. I would get triggered faster and by smaller things. So that would be my biggest thing.
Which is, again, a sleep deprivation scenario. Definitely happens. The less sleep you get, the smaller your patience.
And the irritability that that men are more likely to express in response to feelings of depression.
Right. And you mentioned, you know, how overwhelming your anger could feel sometimes.
Yes. That was in the beginning. And I probably did also the one you mentioned, Dr. Will, the male thing. I just got busy working, like getting at it. So I'm going to review my mental files here after this radio show and say, so, what's really going on? But the story as it is right now is that, I got angry. I felt powerless in the moment. Heidi got a back injury as a consequence of the C-section, so she was in pain for years until that got sorted out. So there was a lot of consequences, and
Martin, you mentioned that it takes really more than two. And, you know, that's my research and other people's research looking at postpartum depression in fathers have found that, you know, social support and the lack of it is a, you know, predictor of depression in men. So, you know, for those men who really don't have a lot of support outside of their partner, they really are at greater risk for anxiety or depression postpartum. And that it really is so critical and crucial to have that additional support outside of the two of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you go. What about postpartum depression for Heidi? I mean, I know you said that she experienced PTSD pretty seriously as a result of the traumatic birth.
Yeah.
Did you ever get the feeling she was also depressed or...
Depressed or worn out? It's again sleep deprivation. I don't know the distinction, but it takes a lot to be a mom. I mean, that's breastfeeding and all that jazz. So
yeah, as we watch a woman dance around the studio with a baby on her breast as we speak.
Yeah.
Go Ryan.
We don't get to watch that, Dana. That would be. We can hear it, but that would be fun.
Yeah, it's makes for an entertaining show.
Yeah. No, what one thing I remember from Heidi also, just, besides everything else that happened, is she got an IV, actually I think one in each arm, which hit a nerve. So like every time she moved an arm, she would have a stabbing pain.
Oh, wow.
Which is like reminders of what had happened. And in preparing for the show here, she told me also, which kind of hasn't registered on my radar until she told me, was that the birthdays would be a trauma day rather than a happy celebration. It would be a revisiting of the trauma.
Right.
So that kind of, that must have sucked for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, there's nothing much I could do about it except listen and so, I mean, we told the stories many times, and she got to tell the story many times, and I tried to tell the story many times to people from my perspective right after it happened, because I know that's a trauma-releasing technique, is just tell the story over and over instead of digging it, burying it down,
right,
and trying to ignore it.
Way to go.
So that's a practical tip. If you had a horrible experience, find lots of people to tell it to, or one person who can listen many times.
Yes, there you go.
You have two other children, Martin, after that experience. So
yes.
What, I mean, what did you learn through that? You went back to Sweden.
Yeah, yeah. It was many reasons, but one of them is that the policies in Sweden are better. And that's a whole long story about in Swedish hospitals. If you go to the hospital in Sweden, you have midwives who take care of births. And if there's complications, then the doctors get involved. And again, appropriate level of care. We had home birth in Sweden and two VBACs. And definitely not traumatic and horrible as it felt in the hospital. So, and also to shout out to Sweden as a dad. When the baby is born, you get 2 weeks off immediately.
Yes.
Paid, and then you get a year and a half off between the parents to split, so you can have take care of your kid, and so.
Yeah, so right off the bat, you're just alleviated, you know, all of that financial pressure that Dr. Will was talking about. That
right.
Those economic stressors just disappear when you're when you live in a country that actually
supports
cares about
you.
Things like that.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
it
right.
Was, I was thinking about that when you were talking before, Dr. Will. It's like there's a financial equation in here that one could make a political argument from underslept men being depressed, not being productive in the workforce, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Besides just a humanitarian approach, which the way I grew up with it. But yeah, the reality in the U.S. of stories I've heard where dad in labor, where labor is taking longer than expected, has to make calls to work to see, can somebody take his other shifts, because he's missed two shifts already, and now he's going to miss a third, or miss the baby, and then go back straight to work the next day because he has to. It's, we went to Sweden. we had the option. We went to Sweden. It was more relaxed, for sure.
Well, there you go. What kind of actions did you take besides talking to people about the traumatic birth experience to heal on your own? I mean, you were having to go through all of those emotions yourself. You were having to support Heidi and watch her suffering in a type of pain that you couldn't really fix.
Nope.
That's a lot to deal with.
I guess I have great capacity for carrying things around. I got busy. I got busy working, and I got busy taking care of the household. And also, what I lost in somewhere in there was also exercise, which is a good thing. I'm starting getting back into that, and I'm noticing how much more energy I have when I actually exercise. So,
well, that's a great coping strategy for dads out there listening.
Yeah.
Even if you don't feel like you have very much energy, exercise and movement is one way to get yourself some more. Get those endorphins
and
pumping.
It's effective in reducing depression.
That's right.
Yep. What else did I do? I have my community of people that I've done my personal development work with. And even if I don't see them, I know they're there. Mm-hmm. So that's a great help, just to know that they're there. And if you bump into them 4 years later, it's like, hi, how are you? I haven't seen you for 2 weeks. But yeah, I moved to Sweden and back again. So yeah, that's about 4 years. So I think that's been something, to have an invisible community, even if I didn't pull into it. So.
Because don't you say or see in your work, Dr. Will, men are so much more reluctant to admit that maybe they're having an emotional struggle, so...
No, we don't. Joke. Smiley.
Yeah, exactly.
You're fine. You're fine, Martin.
so it's how do you reach out for help when you're in denial yourself? Dun, dun, dun.
So, yeah, and it's not only being in denial, but also just feeling. And this is where, a woman's role can be really important, because oftentimes, it's hard not only for men themselves, but their partners were really, in many cases, sort of depending upon having that there sort of rock by their side, during this time. And it can be hard for, women, especially women who are, new moms who are, struggling themselves every day. It can be really hard when their partner suddenly is just not there for them. There's the cultural notion that, men are going to be the rock that's there for you, supporting you by your side. So men oftentimes feel a lot of shame when they can't be that rock for their partner. And so it's very easy at that point to just want to deny it, push it away.
Or get busy.
Go off to the office.
Right.
So what they can. Okay, so what I can do is I can go to the office and I can... work and earn money, and that's my way of providing support to her. So it's hard. It is hard to kind of break through that. Unfortunately, it's not, again, just men. There's a cultural myth that in our country that, men don't get depressed. And that myth is so powerful that, clinicians, as I said earlier, are even less likely to see depression in men than women when it's there. So it is hard to kind of break through that. And yet, I think one of the best messages for men to take away is that, if they can't do it for themselves, they really need to do it for their kids. Because left untreated, that depression is going to have a huge impact on his child's well-being down the road.
Yep, that's right. That's That's great advice. Speaking of advice, what kind of advice do you have, Martin, as a dad, for first-time dads to be out there that have their birth plan in hand? You said you were coached well.
If you go to a hospital, if you're planning to go to a hospital, I would recommend to bring a doula, because if you need to leave your wife's side, she will have somebody by her side, an attendant to take care of her if you need to do something else. Because that was other part of the hospital. It's like, I want to be here for my wife, but it seems I have to go over here to deal with the problem of the hospital. Right. And just stand up for what you want. I had to be more fierce than I thought I had to be. And that would be my other tip, if that happens. Yeah.
All right. Get ready to fight a battle if you're in the position in which you need one.
It seems so strange to say that.
Right?
We were in an extreme situation, so hopefully you'll never have to end up there. But if you end up there, just be determined.
There we go. Well, we're out of time, everybody.
As usual,
that's it for tonight's episode of Maternally Yours. We want to thank everyone who makes the conversation possible, especially our listeners and guests tonight. Our thanks to Dr. Will Courtney and to Martin Dahlberg.
Thank you, Dr. Will.
Yes.
It was my pleasure. It was great to talk with you both.
Have a great...
And you too, Martin.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Martin.
Good night.
Good night.
Listening to Maternally Yours, your conversation about pregnancy, childbirth, and early motherhood. Produced at WSLR 96.5 LPFM, Sarasota's community radio station.
Our volunteer hosts, writers, and producers are Ryan Stanley, Laura Gilkey, and Dana King. You can find our most recent podcast at maternallyyoursradio.com, where you can also contact us with your comments, questions, and stories.
Until next week, we leave you with the words of Dr. Maya Angelou. When you know better, you do better. Thanks for joining the conversation.